Why We Cook is sponsored today by TechServe. Hi, and welcome to Why We Cook on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education in New York, and we're broadcasting live today from the Heritage Radio Network studio behind Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you want to call into our show today with any questions, the number is 718-497-2128. So today's show is all about the much maligned eggplant. I know it seems like a slightly obsessively singular subject to talk about, but it is the season for eggplant, and I like to talk about what's in season. And I think eggplant has a kind of a bad reputation. People love it or hate it, but they don't really understand it. So I want to start off with a little story. When I was in first grade on Long Island, I had a really, really terrible teacher the first year named Miss McDonald. And I won't get into too much detail about why she was a terrible teacher, but one of the highlight terrible things about her was that she was unable to deal with the kids in the class coming into first grade with varying levels of ability. I had already learned how to read in the year before, in kindergarten, I had learned how to read. And Miss McDonald didn't like that at all. She wanted everyone to be on the same level so she could teach us all at the same pace. She had some control issues. So Miss McDonald decided that since we were also learning how to write, and my printing was a little on the messy side, she could use my poor printing skills as a reason to punish me by not allowing me to read in class anymore. That was her logic. I'm not kidding. This really happened. She punished me for poor handwriting by not allowing me to read. Now, luckily for me, by the middle of the year, Miss McDonald got herself hitched and left school. And a really nice older lady took her place, a seasoned teacher, a grandma kind of teacher who gave lots of hugs and basically let me read as much as I wanted. So everything turned out okay. But before Miss McDonald left for her marriage, she decided one day out of the blue to give us a treat. And one afternoon, she brought in a classic 1970s electric skillet, filled it up with oil, and pulled out an eggplant. And she cut the eggplant up into little cubes and rolled them in flour and deep fried them and then passed them out on little paper plates to my bewildered classmates and myself. And I seriously have no idea why she did this. We hadn't been studying vegetables or cooking. It was first grade. We were learning how to read and how to write. And as far as I can remember, there had been no previous discussion of eggplant at all. She just decided one day that her first grade class was going to taste cubes of fried eggplant. It was okay with me. I was into food even back then, and it was good. It was tasty in a kind of bland fried eggplant sort of way. I don't think she seasoned it or anything. So we all sat there quietly, nibbling on our eggplant. And there was a kid in the class who was the archetypal kid who said dumb things. You know how every class had the kid who said the dumb things? The kid who probably should have been in special ed, but managed to squeak in to the mainstream? And he was the kind of kid who I think I first learned how to roll my eyes at from listening to him. And after we had all tasted the eggplant, he exclaimed with his mouth full of chewed up eggplant, "It tastes like pizza." I, of course, rolled my eyes and thought, "You unsophisticated, unimaginative barbarian. Why would you say it tastes like pizza? There's nothing in this that tastes at all like pizza. And by the way, close your mouth when you're talking." That's when I first realized that it might be possible to be a food snob or to at least be somewhat elitist about food. But I look back on this whole kind of strange little event in my life as a sort of a metaphor for how far we've come in culinary America since then. Miss McDonald probably knew of no other way to cook back eggplant than to bread it and fry it. And it was probably her attempt to expose us to something interesting or exotic. I'm still wondering why she did it. And little Biff, or whatever his name was, had no other frame of reference that he could extract from other than his experience with pizza, probably. So that all got me thinking when I started to think about doing a show on eggplant about how it really is a misunderstood vegetable. And the story popped into my mind. And there are so many other things you can do with eggplant, not, you know, not just fry it. Although frying it is can be great. And who doesn't love a good eggplant parmesan? But the eggplant has so much capacity for love. And it's calling out to you for some tenderness and some affection. Something other than frying. And so this time of year at the green markets, the eggplants are really just starting to pop. Like last week we talked about tomatoes, and now we're really getting into the eggplant season. And it's not just the big purple Italian ones that we're all familiar with, the iconic ones, but there are hundreds of varieties in the world. And even locally here, you'll see them. There are white ones and lavender and ones that are purple and white striped. There are green ones, and I've even seen little orange ones. In Turkey, they use little orange eggplants. And they're in all shapes and sizes, from tiny pea-sized ones up to those kind of giant industrial purple ones. I'm kind of partial to a variety called the Ichiban, which is a Japanese eggplant. It's the longer, narrower type, and I think they're a little bit sweeter and mellower than some of the big Italian ones. And I also love one called the Kermit. And it's about the size of a golf ball, and it's green, and it's got a pattern around the top that looks like Kermit the Frog's little scalloped neckline that he has. And I love that one. It's harder, and it's a little bit more bitter, but it softens really well when you cook it, and it mellows out when you cook it in a Thai curry or something like that. And it holds its shape really well, so it's great. And last month when I was in Vietnam, I had eggplants in a dish, and I thought that they were peas, but they were really bitter and really crunchy, and it turned out that they were eggplants. They were the size of peas, but they were tiny, and they stayed together, and they popped when you crunched on them, and they were in a really spicy, oily kind of fish stew, and it was such a great combination of things. So we're so used to thinking of vegetables in their kind of singular, iconic form. We grow up looking at picture books. We see an apple or a carrot or an eggplant, and we think, oh, that's what it looks like. It's red, or it's orange, or it's purple. It's this shape. But, you know, like people, there are so many varieties. And that one hybridized, industrialized version that we all grew up with isn't necessarily the best or the best tasting. It's just the one that has risen to prominence in the market. And eggplant's a perfect example of that. So later on in the show, I'll be having a guest on named Lee Jones. And Lee Jones is a farmer at the Chef's Garden in Ohio. And a couple weeks ago, I was out at the Chef's Garden. I talked about an event I went to. And at the Chef's Garden, they grow, I think, 15 varieties of eggplant this year. I'm not sure the number. So we'll get that from Lee later, and we'll talk to him about the types of eggplants they grow. So we'll be talking to him in the third segment. When we come back in a few seconds, we'll be talking more about eggplant and how to cook it and some of the history of it and a few ideas for what you can do with it. So we'll be back in a few seconds, and we'll talk some more about eggplant.
Today's program was brought to you by TechServe, www.techserve.com.
Welcome back to Why We Cook on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides. I'm a chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education in Manhattan, and we're broadcasting today from Roberta's Pizza in beautiful, sunny Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you're a fan of Why We Cook, you can visit our Facebook page. Just search Why We Cook in Facebook and become a fan. Let me know if you're listening, if you have any questions, comments, if you want any recipes. And you know, you can also always call into the show, too, anytime at 718-497-2128. So today we're talking about eggplant. And it may seem like a strange, singular subject, but I think it's a really maligned, misunderstood vegetable. Technically, it's a berry, actually, not a vegetable. first of all, it has such a bad name. It's such a poorly named fruit. The French and the English call it aubergine, which is so much more poetic and so much more beautiful. The color is called aubergine. Eggplant is such a strange sounding name. Now, I love eggs, of course, and I love plants, but there's nothing eggy at all about this plant. And unlike eggs, it gets softer as it cooks, not harder. And the way to make it really great and really sing is to cook the hell out of it, which is the way you ruin an egg. The more you cook an egg, the less appealing it is. The more you cook an eggplant, the better it gets. So I think we should all start calling it aubergine instead. But you do what you want. So the name comes from the first cultivated varieties, which were white and yellow. So they looked like eggs. That's where the name comes from. The French name aubergine comes from some earlier Persian and Sanskrit names because the eggplant is native to India. It comes from India. It's been cultivated there and in Southeast Asia for thousands and thousands of years. But it only came to Europe after about the 1500s. And like the tomato, which I talked about last week, it was originally thought to be poisonous. And it needed a lot of good PR and a lot of good spin to convince people of its edibility. And I think there's still a bit of a stigma against it. Now, you may love eggplant, or you may hate it, or maybe you're indifferent, or maybe you've never had it cooked properly. But to me, it's one of the foods that proves that we were meant to cook some of our food. Certain vegetables are great raw. I'm certainly a fan of raw vegetables. I love sushi. I love raw fruit. But I also really think that we were meant to cook some of our food. And if you've been listening to this show since the beginning, the first show I did of Why We Cook was all about that. It was why we cook. Why do we cook our food? What's led us to cooking our food? An eggplant, to me, is a perfect reason of why we cook our vegetables or our eggplant. Because you really don't want to eat it raw. If you've tried, you may have seen it's quite unpalatable raw. Eggplant is a member of the nightshade family, which also includes potatoes, tomatoes, peppers, tobacco, and of course, deadly nightshade, which is a poison. And some nightshades are edible and some aren't, but they all contain something called solanine. And solanines are toxic compounds that the plants use to defend themselves from pests. They're natural pesticides built into the plant. In eggplants, the solanines can be very bitter, but the bitterness diminishes during cooking. Now, the more you cook it, the less bitter it is. The solanines diminish. And cooking it also makes it sweeter because the sugars in it caramelize. And for many people, including me, if I eat eggplant that's slightly undercooked, I actually get painful little kind of sore spots in my mouth. And I know the eggplant hasn't been cooked enough if it causes pain. But I love it, so I cook it enough and I get beyond it. And interestingly, also, eggplant contains nicotine. It's a close relative of tobacco. So it does contain some nicotine, but you'd have to eat about 20 pounds of it to get the equivalent nicotine of one cigarette. So there isn't much of a risk of addiction. You don't have to worry. So like I said in my first show, I had talked about how cooking our food advanced us beyond the hunter-gatherer model of early humans and made us civilized, made us sit down around a fire, eat communally, look one another in the eye, start communicating. Cooking civilized us, but it also has protected us from natural toxins in plants and animals that otherwise could have harmed us or killed us. If we hadn't figured out that we could eat the eggplant and we had eaten it raw, the solanine could have eventually made us sick. So in many recipes, because of that bitterness, there's this old standard rule, which is that you should salt it and then drain it to remove this so-called bitterness. The salting pulls out moisture, which contains the solanine. But most modern hybrids, modern cultivars of eggplant, have had a lot of the bitterness bred out of them. So you actually don't really need to do that. But salting, however, will help to collapse the cell walls. Remember, back to basic science. And because of that, it makes the eggplant less spongy. And it will absorb less oil when you're cooking it. If you've ever tried to fry it or to saute it, you know that it soaks up a lot of oil as it cooks. But if you salt it first, the sponginess kind of goes away and you can use less oil when you cook it, especially if you want to chop it up and cook it for your first grade class like old Miss McDonald did way back in 1973. I don't know if she knew that trick. So sauteing it, frying it are always great. And, you know, a good eggplant parm, fried eggplant's great. But there are so many other ways to cook it that don't require salting or even a lot of oil. Now, one of the best ways to do it is to just take the whole eggplant, poke a few holes in it, stick it in the oven, and roast it until it's blackened all over and it starts to collapse. And that's how you make things like baba ganoush, the Middle Eastern spread. You just cook the eggplant until it really just dies in the oven. The skin should blacken. It should collapse completely. Take it out of the oven. Cool it down until you can touch it. Scrape out all the flesh. And then puree it or chop it with some garlic, lemon juice, olive oil, tahini, and a good pinch of salt. And that's it. And you can make it as smooth as you like or leave it a little bit choppy. But that's how you make baba ganoush. And that's how you make many eggplant dishes. And that's a good way to start if you don't want to saute it or fry it, is just roast it. The same thing is used to make a Greek eggplant salad. And in India, they make a dish called bengan bhartha, which is done similarly. The eggplant is roasted or grilled until it falls apart, and then it's sauteed with onions and spices and chilies. You can also just slice it up, brush the slices with oil, and then roast it or grill it that way too. And with that, you get more surface caramelization, so you'll get kind of less of like a steamy flavor and more of a grilled or roasted flavor. And I like to do that. I'll slice it up, brush it with oil, grill it, and then chop up those grilled slices into rough chunks and toss it with tomatoes and basil and some lemon juice and some olive oil and make a nice salad out of it. And if you look around at farmers markets this time of year, you can actually find really nice little tiny eggplants, little purple or white ones or lavender ones that aren't much bigger than about a tennis ball. And those are great because you can slice them in half lengthwise, scoop out the interior, and then chop up that interior and saute it with some garlic, some onions, breadcrumbs, some herbs, kind of soften that all up, moisten it all up, and then stuff it back into the eggplant shell, drizzle the whole thing with olive oil, and then bake it until it's really soft. And that's how it's done in Provence in the south of France. They do it like that. Southern Italy does it. They do it like that in Greece. And it's really nice. You want to use little ones, and you can do individual servings that way, and it's really nice. You could do the same thing with peppers and tomatoes and zucchini also, and do sort of a whole assortment of stuffed small vegetables. A couple of years ago, I did that, and I found these great little zucchini that were shaped sort of like eggs, and I hollowed them out from one end, and I found little tiny eggplants, and I did a whole platter of them, and it was great. If you listen to last week's show, when I talked about tomatoes, I talked about tomatoes and old bread being the basis of dishes like gazpacho and panzanella. And I also mentioned ratatouille. And ratatouille is a very slowly sauteed, then stewed dish of eggplant, peppers, tomatoes, and zucchini. And the idea is that you want to cook everything really slowly so that you can maximize the amount of sugar that you develop and the amount of water that you cook out. Because remember that cooking is really all about removing the water from food. That's fundamentally all it is you want to take the water out of the food so that the water doesn't taste like food, so it tastes like what the food is. The sugars can develop, it can roast, it can caramelize, the complex flavor molecules can really develop. So especially something like a vegetable, vegetables are full of water. Some vegetables are about 90% water. So the idea is to get the water out of them. Think about the difference between a cooked mushroom and a raw mushroom. Raw mushrooms don't really taste like anything. Cooked mushrooms taste great. And one last way to cook it, which I think is great, is to steam it. Now, I know I just said that cooking is about taking the water out of food. And you're going to say, but chef, if you're steaming, you're adding moisture to it. But technically you're not, because the heat of the steam is forcing the moisture out of the cells. So if you just cut it up into large chunks and steam it until it gets really soft, it gets this really fantastic silky texture. You can even do it in the microwave, even though technically I don't advocate using microwaves. But of course, when nobody's looking, I use one. And if you chop your eggplant up, put it in a covered dish in the microwave and cook it, it gets really soft, really silky and delicious. And then I make a little dressing for it out of white miso. You just buy the miso in the health food store and whisk it up with some lemon juice, a little bit of mirin, which is Japanese cooking wine, a little bit of olive oil, drizzle it over the warm eggplant and sprinkle it with some crumbled nori and some scallions. And it's great. And you can serve that room temperature or hot or cold, but it's really delicious. Okay, so that's it for the cooking segment of the show. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll be speaking with Lee Jones, who is a farmer, Lee Jones, of the Chef's Garden in Ohio. So we'll be right back.
listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Today's program was brought to you by TechServe. www.techserve.com.
Welcome back to Why We Cook. I'm Erica Wides, chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education. And today on Why We Cook, we've been talking all about eggplant, or aubergine, if you're British or French. And I wanted to kind of give you all an idea of what you can do with it, other than what my first grade teacher, Miss McDonald, did, which was fry it. There are so many other ways that you can use eggplant, and so many nicer preparations that you can do. And also, get out there and try some other varieties. Don't just go for those big Hulk and purple ones, but buy some of the nice little striped ones, or the green ones, or the orange ones. See what you can do with it. You can't go wrong. Just, you know, if you don't like what you made, just cook it down and call it soup. That's what I always tell people. And coming up in a minute, we'll have our special guest, who is Farmer Lee Jones from the Chef's Garden in Huron, Ohio. And the Chef's Garden is a place that is very close to my heart because it is a farm that grows incredibly beautiful, very carefully nurtured vegetables that are sold predominantly to the trade, to restaurants and to chefs. They do a little bit of selling to the public, but they grow some really amazingly beautiful stuff, and it's all grown very sustainably and very carefully. And I think one year I was out there and they had about 65 varieties of tomato growing in the field. And I think this year they have about 16 varieties of eggplant or so. So we're just waiting to get Lee on the phone, and we'll talk to him in a minute when we get back. Just a couple of other ideas for things you can do with eggplant. In Vietnam, they do a really nice salad where they'll take those sort of Japanese eggplants that are the long, narrow ones that are a little bit milder, and they'll split them lengthwise and then grill them like that. Just grill the halves until they're really nice and soft, and then make a little crab salad of crabs and shallots and some herbs, a little bit of fish sauce, and just sprinkle it right over the top and serve the whole thing. And that's a really great way to serve it, too. You can also, like I said, just put it in the oven and roast it until it totally collapses, and then puree it. And you can make a really nice soup that way, too. Nobody generally thinks of eggplant as a soup, but it purees beautifully. And you can do a little bit of like a curried eggplant soup. Just saute some onions and garlic and shallots with a little bit of curry or a little Thai curry, some coconut milk. Throw in your roasted eggplant. Throw in some stock or some water. Simmer it. Puree it. And it's great. And it's actually good served cold, too. It's really nice. We're still waiting on Lee Jones. I think he may be out in the field, and we're having trouble getting him. He may be having an eggplant emergency in the field. So we may not get to him today, but that's okay. We'll get back to him. One of the things I was thinking about, too, is that often, you know, people have arthritis, and it's been thought that these nightshade plant families, the potatoes, tomatoes, eggplants, can affect arthritis. And people have been told for a long time to avoid eating them because of that. I'm not really sure if that's true. I've heard it's been disproven. I don't know. If anybody knows anything about that, knows what the most current research is on that, please feel free to give me a call or to email me. Let me know, because I'd really like to know. There are arthritis sufferers in my family, and they've heard mixed messages over the years about that. If you would like to become a fan of Why We Cook, you can visit us on Facebook. We have our own Facebook page now. So you just go to Facebook and search for Why We Cook and become a fan. You can ask me questions. If you need any recipes from this week or last week's show, feel free. And while I'm talking about last week's show, I wanted to mention something. I did a whole show last week on tomatoes, talking about gazpacho and its kind of culinary cousins. And the day after I did that show, there was announced in the news that there's a huge tomato blight sweeping the East Coast, which is really sad for the tomato farmers, really sad for us, the consumer. But it's important to know that the farmers who sell to the farmers markets are suffering because their tomato crops are all dying. This blight is really insidious, and the tomato plants have to be completely destroyed because the blight is caused by a spore. And if the spores aren't completely destroyed, they stay around until the following year and can infect the plants again, and it can spread to potatoes and other crops. So if you go to your farmer's market this year, you go to your local store, and they don't have the tomatoes that you love, it's probably because of the blight. The farmers who sell and grow tomatoes are going to really take a huge hit this year because of that. So you should get out there and support them and buy their other products and their other vegetables to make up for the loss that they're taking. And I've been checking my own tomato plants really meticulously to make sure they don't have a blight. If you're a home gardener and you have the tomato blight, if you see it, you need to destroy your plants. You need to either burn them or put them in a plastic bag and put them in the garbage. Don't put them in your compost because the blight spores will stay. So I think we're good with Lee now. Do we have Lee on the line?
Hey, good afternoon,
Hi.
Chef Erica.
Hey,
how are
Farmer.
You?
Good. How are you? Did you have some sort of tomato emergency?
Well, very fortunately, we do not have a tomato emergency.
Oh, good.
The cooler conditions and, of course, moist conditions have certainly added to the problems. And we've been cooler, but we have not had the extra moisture. So,
so we've been lucky.
Yeah, I walked the field this morning about 6:30.
Uh-huh.
They look good.
Right, I saw you had posted on Facebook that you were eating tomatoes at 6:30 this morning.
Right.
I was jealous. Yeah, I guess because we've had such a wet spring and summer here on the East Coast, that's a big part of it.
It really is.
Yeah. So what's your eggplant situation like? We did a whole show today on eggplant, and I was talking about how at the farm you grow so many varieties. So how many are you doing?
Well, you know, we've got it reduced back, Chef. We're only doing 11 varieties this year.
Only 11.
And 1 year, we sent my dad out to the Seed Savers Exchange out in Decorah, Iowa.
In Iowa. Uh-huh.
And he came back with 100 different varieties.
Wow.
And we did experimentation and testing on 100 varieties of eggplant.
Wow.
Now I like eggplant, but yep. Boy, after that season, I was kind of a... But with the help of some chefs from around the country, we narrowed it down to 11 of the varieties that we thought were really the very best ones.
Mm-hmm. They were what, sweetest, bulkiest, meatiest, just had
right,
the best flavor.
Or the color, yep. Mm-hmm. You know, certainly flavors were all part of it, but, you know, we eat with our eyes in that presentation. I think the coloring,
right.
You know, certainly lent to it as well.
Right.
And shapes and textures.
Uh-huh. Do you have any idea what the chefs are doing with it, or you don't really find out?
Oh, boy. You know, I always like to ask what can't be done with it. I really would hesitate in trying to get in. I'm a farmer. I'm not a chef, and
right.
I would hate to get into trying to
get
duplicate
into the
what they're doing.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So can you give us just some of the names of some of the varieties? Because whenever I'm out at the farm, all your vegetables all have such beautiful names. I love the kind of old-fashioned names of some of the varieties.
Well, sure. Calliope, mm-hmm. Black coral. We have one called Casper, which mm-hmm. obviously is a white one.
Right.
Little Fingers.
Nice.
And, of course, it looks somewhat like a lady's finger, a
uh-huh.
little bit more elongated and slender
right.
than my short, fat farmer's hands. we have a variety called Kermit that's a round.
Oh, yeah.
You're probably familiar with that one, round, and it's green,
right.
and then it kind of breaks into a white color. It's one of my favorites.
Me, too. I mentioned beautiful. That in the earlier segment. They use those a lot in Thailand, too, in curries.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
You just got back from there, right?
From Vietnam, yeah.
Okay,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's great. And are they're in season now? This is, it's time?
This really is, probably mm-hmm. for the next 6 weeks. And, of course, when we start them from seed in the greenhouse
mm-hmm.
In early March, and, of course, our frost-free date here in Ohio is March 15th.
Oh,
so
yeah,
we transplant them even within the greenhouse into a 4-inch pot so that they can continue to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And then we put black plastic down, a biodegradable black plastic, on the ground ahead of time and really capture, of course, the darker color absorbs the warm temperature and
sure.
gets that ground temperature warmed up.
Mm-hmm.
But in underneath of the black plastic, we even run what we call drip tape. So that we can be more environmentally friendly and not waste the water, but
right.
put the water right where the plant needs it.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, you're not watering weeds as well.
Sure. And they must need a lot of water to make them all sort of so bulbous, right? And they suck up a lot of water?
Well, they do. And I think one of the keys, even when watering in the home garden for your listeners, is I think sometimes we just surface water and it looks wet to us. And it'd be better to have the water drip out slowly and
yeah.
really let that absorb. Because if you just water to the top, then that root doesn't go down into the moisture, and the roots stay all up at the top.
Mm-hmm.
So you really want to have a good absorption rate and let that get absorbed and be saturated down
right.
a good foot deep so the roots go down instead of up.
Right, and not lose it all to evaporation, too, which is a huge waste.
Well, that's exactly right.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why that plastic becomes handy. Do you
right,
use any plastic, Erica?
No, you know, I do almost all of my gardening in little pots. Because,
oh, do you? Okay.
As
yeah.
I've told you before, my garden is like the salad bar for the animals, so I keep everything in pots wrapped in mesh. So I haven't, but I think I will try, because I tried to grow some baby carrots this year in an old bathtub, and they turned out really stumpy and tiny. So I think I'm going to try next year to do a little more of that, a little more water preservation and stuff like that.
Sure.
Yeah. But unfortunately, Farmer, we are running out of time.
Okay.
I hate to cut you short, but thanks so much for joining us today. And I can just picture you out there in those fields. I've been out to the farm many times, and it's one of my favorite places in the world to go.
Well, thank you so much. It was a delight to be on board.
Oh,
thank you.
Thanks. All right. And we'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Take care.
Yeah. Bye.
Well, that's about it for us this week on Why We Cook. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. I could probably talk about eggplant for another hour or so, but why don't you go out and buy some and cook it? I want to thank my engineer, Nat, today, and my producer, Jack, and Roberta's Pizzeria for having our beautiful station behind it. And again, Why We Cook is sponsored today by TechServe. If you want to visit us online on Facebook, you can check us out, and you can go to heritageradionetwork.com to listen to any show anytime, archived forever. It'll be there forever. So thanks again, and we'll see you next week on Why We Cook. Take care.